Recording in progress. All right, my name is Luis, and I'm an alcoholic.
Luis!
I just want to say welcome to the newcomers. You know, congratulations on anybody that took chips. Congratulations on the three people that took birthdays. You know, two of them I know personally. It's amazing to see the growth, right, through Alcoholics Anonymous, and lives just continue to flourish, you know, as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just very grateful to be here tonight, you know, surrounded by friends, you know, and that do this thing together, right? And I just want to, like, first, like, state to, like, the newcomers, you know, if you're, I don't know, man, I would sit here as a newcomer, when I would hear people come up and share and do these, like, 45-minute things, and to me, it's like, oh, God, another person talking about how happy they are, you know what I mean? Like, and if you're skeptical and if you're a little suspicious about people talking about how happy they are, good, right? Good, you should be. Stick around and see what we do. You know what I mean? Because I could talk about how happy I am all day long, right? But it's like, it's the actions that I take that are going to keep me here, right? That are going to change my perspective, that are going to get me in contact with this higher power, right? And that's what I've been attempting to do since January 20th, 2015, you know, and that sobriety date goes to God, right? That sobriety date goes to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It did exactly what it was supposed to do for me, right? It's enabled me to get in contact with a power greater than myself, a power that I didn't want anything to do with, right? I would show up to church and just to appease my mom, right? Like, on Sunday mornings, I was at this, I vividly remember this, right? And I want to start off by saying this because I'm going to talk about God, right? And I would show up to church with my mom. You know, she signed me out from the halfway house that I was at in Garden Grove called Unidos back in like 2011 or whatever. And, you know, she'd take me out to church. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to appease my mom, right? Hopefully she's going to take me to get some food afterwards. She's going to take me to get some underwear, some clothes, you know what I mean? And I show up and everybody's got their hands raised, kind of like a church like this, right? And everybody's praising, and I sit there and I look at everybody and I'm like, you know, I just want to massacre the whole room, you know what I mean? Like, how dare you be happy and have like a connection with this loving and higher power, you know, and I'll tell you what, like, that's not how it is today for me, you know, I don't know, when I say I'm an alcoholic, right, what I mean by that is, like, when I honestly intend to, I cannot quit entirely, right, that's the obsession of the mind. As soon as you remove me from drugs and alcohol, that's the only thing I could think about, you know, how could I, like, successfully control and enjoy my drinking, right, it's not where I grew up, it's not the neighborhood, it's not maybe like my mom like didn't breastfeed me enough as a child, like that makes me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is when I honestly intend to, I cannot quit entirely, or if when I take that first one, I have little or no control over the amount that I take after that, right, that's what makes me an alcoholic. But I like drugs, you know what I mean, I like heroin, I like Xanax, and then just to paint a picture, right, like in a tall can of Steel Reserve, right? Once I finish that tall can of Steel Reserve, I flip it over and cut it in half, and that's when the real party starts for me, right? If you identify with that, cool, you know what I mean? But really what it comes down to is what it means for me, like, when I say I'm an alcoholic, right? Today it's like, I don't know, it's the best thing that's ever happened in my life, you know, to come here and have a solution for what's going on up here. Because I'll tell you what, like, before I ever took a drink or a drug, that's when, I don't know, my life sucked, you know, and it was like this internal thing, you know, and it wasn't like anything external. You know, I grew up in the fine city of Paramount in Southeast LA, like, you know, to a single immigrant mother, like, from Mexico, you know, and traditionally, like, she had me out of wedlock with my dad from Mexico, you know, and he split. He's like, you know, then we're not married. So I didn't grow up without a dad. That doesn't make me an alcoholic, right? And I became the man of the house pretty early on. I was like babied. My mom, you know, like typical Mexican mom, like did everything for me. You know what I mean? And I don't know, like, I can't tell you when the sickness started, right, within me. I just remember I share this all the time, right? I just remember watching Lion King, and I felt like the underdog, right? My dad wasn't around. I felt like nobody liked me. I can't. I had to figure it all on my own, And so when I watched Lion King, and I saw Simba like the center of attention, you know what I mean? Everybody's like, Simba's like the best, you know what I mean? He's the good guy, in all honesty, fuck Simba, you know what I mean? I want to be like Scar, you know what I mean? Like that's who I identify with. I want to be like Scar. I want to be the bad guy. He's got a scar right here, he's got a, like all these like hyenas that do his bidding, like they always got the best outfits, Darth Vader, like they're sick, and that's that's who I identified with, is like the underdog, right? The person that nobody's supposed to like, and that's what I thought about, like that's how I thought you all viewed me. So I've heard this before, right? At the age of six, like I was already like threatening my suicide and I was hitting my teachers. I was running out of school. I was doing all this wild stuff. I don't know. I'm not like the biggest fan of sharing my childhood, 'cause it just seems so typical, right? Like just like a distraught youth or whatever. But I grew up in group homes, behavior modification places, and I was in and out of those places like from like the age of 12 to like 18, just in and out of these places. And I was exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous like very early on, but I remember it was in Montana at a youth camp. And it was this guy, Kevin and Lisa, and they were just old and white. You know what I mean? I'm like, like Alcoholics Anonymous, like, what is this? I hadn't touched a drug. The only thing that I hadn't touched a drug, maybe I drank once or twice at the time. And I had already been lying about, there was like an incident in my teenage years where I assaulted a police officer like sober. And I just knew that alcohol and drugs was my solution. And I remember I lied to all my friends, and I told them that I was like drunk, I was drunk, and I did some PCP or something, I'm like 13 years old, lying about drinking and using, because I just knew that was gonna justify my behaviors and how I felt and how I thought, I share this so maybe you guys can get a picture of what the spiritual malady inside of me looks like. Sweating bullets up here. And with the what the spiritual malady looks like inside of me, with no connection to God, right? And living life on my own will. And today, like as I understand it, like the definition of self-will is like stubborn or willful adherence to one's own desires or ideas, and that's how I lived all my whole life, right? I just I live life on my own accordance. I don't know. The first time I sat across from my sponsor, this is probably like January 25th. Or no, you know what? Like this was like 2 weeks. This was like around January 30th, right? Where he sat, I sat across from him, and he told me there was like something happening in like the rehab that I was at, and he told me, "Hey, Luis, you're fighting for a reputation you don't rightfully deserve." And like finally, like the mental clarity finally clicked, right? Like, that's the truth. That's what I needed to hear. And, for me to get to that point, to finally come to Alcoholics Anonymous, is like there's plenty of like drug rehabs, low bottom indigent recovery homes, being incarcerated, everything to do with that, and the nice insurance paid places, where they bring you to meetings like this in a druggy buggy, and on my stepdad's union ticket, the man's been bagging groceries for Albertsons for 10 years. And like, I'm running through his insurance card, like a credit card, just hopping from rehab to rehab. And I show up to the detox, I leave, as soon as I come to, that's like when the real problem starts, I don't, like John said, you know, like I don't have a problem with drugs and alcohol. Like, sure, like there's a lot of consequences to that. My problem is sobriety. You know, as I get sober, that's when I start feeling like I'm suffocating, right? You've removed me from the only thing that brings me any joy, any happiness, any peace, any contentment in life. Like, that's when I'm like, that's when I go nuts, right? That's when the real problem starts. And I'm sitting in a detox, or I'm sitting in a low bottom indigent recovery home, and I'm like, I'm wearing maybe like other people's clothes, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking like, don't these guys know the caliber of the man that I am? You know what I mean? Don't they know where I've been? Don't they know what I'm about out there on the streets? You know, and all in that like train of thought, right? Hey, Luis, time for meds. Luis, time for bed. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in full flight from reality. You know, I can't see myself with some honest eyes. You know, I don't know if you're in rehab right now. I hope that like something I say disturbs you. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that like it hits a nerve. You know, that maybe like, what am I doing with my life here? Thank God for the people that came before me and shared their experience. You know, they shared their experience about being happy, about being joyous and free, but also they shared their experience about being miserable, lonely, desperate for something different. That's exactly how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. So for the point from like, I don't know, I drink and get loaded, you know, like I could talk about that all day. You know, I'll tell you, I'll just describe to you what condition I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in. You know, I was 24 years old, January 20th, 2015. And the person that I had become after continuous times in institutions, recovery homes, I had ran out of options, right? And I didn't know it at the time, right? Like, I didn't have any like, oh, you know, like any great ideas about what I needed to do to stay sober. All I could grasp onto was this relationship I was in, and how she got away from me. She started going to meetings, you know, and she started having boundaries, morals, and my least favorite one, she finally got her new higher power. You know what I mean? And like, I stopped being her higher power, you know, and shattered my world, you know, and I saw what Alcoholics Anonymous or just meetings was doing in her life. I didn't know what she was doing, or she had a sponsor or whatever, but right, she was like my Ebby Thatcher, right? Where I this is someone that I knew, who I knew got loaded like I got loaded, and now they're sober, and you guys did that for her so I could come here. Yeah, like that's a trip, right? And so I woke up January 14th, 2015, in the great city of Stanton, off of Rose Street. You know, if you know anything about Stan, it's they call it the asshole of Orange County, you know, or the armpit of Orange County or whatever. I was literally like, this is where I needed to like be, right? To finally accept Alcoholics Anonymous as a means of solution. I was sitting, like, I was living in a tin shed behind the shooting gallery, right? This decrepit old HIV Hep C infested place. To this day, the city of Stanton has like condemned that place. It's no longer inhabitable, you know, and the older homies, the veteranos or whatever, they told me, hey Luis, the way you get drunk and loaded, right, it's unacceptable around this fine establishment. If you want to get drunk and loaded, go to Chevron right around the corner. You know, I remember reading Bill's story, and he talks about becoming an like unwelcome hanger-on around stock brokerage places. You know, I never identified with anything so much more in my life. You know, that was me. I was like the unwelcome hanger-on at the trap pad, at the methadone clinic. You know, nobody wanted me around anymore. You know, and I don't share that like I'm cooler than now, or like look at my bottom. You know what I mean? I go for the mean streets of Orange County or whatever. Like, I share that so you guys can bear witness to what Alcoholics Anonymous can do for your life. You know, through me, right? Through what it's done in my life. It's funny because as a kid, like I had dreams and aspirations. Like, it wasn't to be a astronaut or like a police officer or like a firefighter. I want to be like a high-powered gang member, you know, and that's what I truly wanted to be, you know. And I don't know, it was crazy or whatever. But you know, those dreams were shattered when my mom moved us to like move me, or she got the opportunity to move to Huntington Beach. You know what I mean? Like, no disrespect to Huntington Beach, but I love that place today. You know, you know, I had the opportunity to go like to downtown last night, and everybody's like wearing green. You know, everybody's like all of a sudden Irish or whatever. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Yeah. The funny thing about like my life today is I can experience things and I can remember, right? I don't wake up the next morning and I'm not coming to and hurting or like needing my next fix. You know, I come to healthy, and like the first thought like is like, God, direct my thinking, divorce me from selfishness and self-centeredness. You know, and then I brush my teeth, I hit the grill, and then I hit my knees, and I thank God, right? I thank God that I get to wake up another day sober and do as he wills. You know, it's not always like that. So I don't know. Early on, I got a sponsor. Like, I got sober in Anaheim, and they take us to this, like, meeting in downtown Fullerton. And finally, people I could connect with, right? People from my cut of cloth, right, that had been through what I had been through, and talked about being in the same place as I've been. And most importantly, they were talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. I showed up to that meeting, and I ran into somebody that I got loaded with. And he introduced me to someone. He's like, hey, you should ask this guy to be your sponsor. You know, and I made a judgment call on this man. He was like younger than me, he had a different race than me, and he had these like thick glasses, right? And he was like he looked like a grown-up minion. You know what I mean? He'd like walk into the meeting like from like that door right there, and like before he got to where he was gonna sit, he already said hi to everybody. He's loud and kissing babies, and you know what I mean? Like, it's saying hi to everybody, and it just annoyed me. You know, like, God, that guy's too happy, right? And I'm like, that guy surely can't be my sponsor. You know what I mean? Like, he can't be my sponsor. And I had asked somebody else to be my sponsor, like, because they had neck tattoos. And I was like, yeah, this guy looks like he's been there and done that, right? Like, he's been in prison, blah, 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 blah. And I called that man straight for 2 weeks, you know, and he stopped answering my phone calls. And I was like, placed in this position where I'm either going to say Alcoholics Anonymous isn't going to work for me, because like one person didn't answer my phone call, you know, one person didn't say hi to me, one person didn't offer me coffee or didn't save me a seat or whatever, you know what I mean? Or how bad do I really want this? I don't know about you guys, but I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I don't know how often you have to think about killing yourself before you actually commit the act, because that's exactly where I was at, you know, completely alone, you know, desperate for something different. I just didn't want to feel the way that I felt anymore. And all I knew how to change that was drugs and alcohol. I woke up, you know, like January 20th, 2015, and I wanted to stay sober like a little bit more than I wanted to get loaded. So after those 2 weeks of like blowing this guy up, and I asked my buddy Max, who was a tech at that time, you know, and this is like my best friend in the world. I've had the privilege of being one of his groomsmen in his wedding. He just did a gender reveal yesterday, you know, and he's having a second kid, a baby boy, you know, like beautiful. Like, that's like, he was like the first, I could say like the first representation of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, like there was two times I showed up to that rehab, and I had left, right? Cause I needed to go get well. I just didn't need to be there, you know? He didn't tell me to, hey, just stay. You know, he's like, all right, bro, you're going to go. I get it. You know, I'm not going to stop you, but I understand how you feel. He was practicing Alcoholics Anonymous. One alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic. Thank God for that, man. So I asked him, like, hey, man, this guy stopped answering my phone calls. Like, do you have anybody you can recommend? He's like, I got just the guy for you. Jacob, call him up. who did it happen to be, this guy, the grown up minion, you know? And he'd always come up to the podium, right, every time, and he'd share, like, I'm probably going to butcher it, right, but he'd share, like, practical experience shows nothing so much more as intensive work with other alcoholics will ensure immunity from another drink, right? Something like that. You know, I had to look up the word immunity. That's protection or exemption from, like, a consequence or something that you're supposed to do, right? He was about Alcoholics Anonymous, and he showed up for me, and that's the first man that, like, finally told me the truth about myself, right? He didn't beat around the bush, right? He told me, like, what was exactly wrong with my condition. You know, I didn't get, like, the nice frothy sponsorship, right? I got the in your face, like, either do it or don't. I don't give a F. You know what I mean? And thank God, because, like, I was finally, like, humbled enough by alcohol, right? I was defeated enough by alcohol to finally have my ears wide open. The moment of clarity, I know I'm jumping around here and there, but whatever. The moment of clarity that I finally had was in a Walmart parking lot. You know, like any good dope fiend story or, like, alcoholic story is, like, a Walmart parking lot. And the last time I got loaded, drunk, whatever you want to call it, you know, I walked to this Walmart parking lot, and I didn't have a cell phone in my name. I didn't have anything in my name. Just a backpack full of clothes that my mom had bought me. And I asked some random person, can I use your phone? I need to call my ride or whatever. And I called someone who I believe was beneath me. And I was like, hey man, you need to come get me right. You know what I mean? Come get me well or whatever. And he's like, all right, I'll be there. I waited 6 hours in the parking lot for this gentleman. and just asking you, can I use your phone number? Can I use your phone? I need to call my ride. Can I, blah, 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 blah. And 6 hours later, he shows up, and I'm sitting in the backseat of his car. You know, his girlfriend goes into Walmart to go return something or whatever. And I'm just waiting for my issue, or, you know, fixing up or whatever. And he's telling me about how she's prostituting herself. They got two hotel rooms. He's selling drugs, and how they're going to, like, ride off into the sunset and kick drugs and live happily ever after, you know? And I'm in like the backseat, and I'm like, this idiot, you know what I mean? Like, this idiot thinks that's going to work out, you know? And I finally had a moment of clarity. Who's the idiot that just waited 6 hours for this guy? Right here, you know what I mean? I didn't come here marching to the beat of victory, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't come here high on life. Like, I didn't have anything going on in my life, right? So Alcoholics Anonymous seemed like the only solution for whatever I had going on. You know, I worked through those 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous like my life depended on it. You know, when talking about, like, spiritual experiences, I believe that, like, I had already been convinced that A, B, and C, right? A, that I'm alcoholic and that my life would become unmanageable. You know, B, that probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Right? And as soon as I heard these gentlemen talking about hitting their knees and trying to contact the higher power through prayer and meditation and helping others and doing the next indicator step and the next right thing. And that's exactly what I did. You know, and I was finally convinced that my life was unmanageable, that I had completely burned my, you know, I had burned everything to the ground. Nobody wanted anything to do with me. My situation, my emotions were intolerable. You know, and I sought out something different, right? And that was a power greater than myself. So I remember sitting and reading the doctor's opinion. I'd already read it because my sponsor directed me to read it. And I'm in rehab, and somebody asked me, hey, you want to read the doctor's opinion with me and two other guys? And, like, I didn't want to, right? But I was like, well, sure, why not? You know, just that little grain of salt willingness just to say, sure. Right? I'm sitting across from this gentleman, and we're reading the doctor's opinion. There's two other guys at the kitchen table reading it with us. And these two other guys, right, they're like, oh, boring. You know what I mean? It's already 9 o'clock at night and they go and go to bed, right? We're going to go and knock out or whatever. And the gentleman across from me, he tells me, like, hey, you want to finish it? And I'm like, no, I like internally, I'm like, no. But I was like, yeah, let's just finish it. We already started it. And that, like, the moment I said that, like, that's when I had, like, this greatest conviction, right? This greatest conviction of flood of emotion, right, from God, right, as I understand it today, from a higher power. Just directing me to go find this guy, Steve. You know, it was, like, his first day in rehab. I had already made it a point to introduce myself to him. And, hey, man, what's up? Welcome to treatment, Steve, you know. If you need anything, let me know, right? So 9 o'clock, and I get this, like, sudden and spectacular upheaval from God, right, to go find this gentleman, Steve. And we finish reading the doctor's opinion, and I'm like, all right, I'll go find him, wherever you want me to find him. And I'm like, he's probably in the shower, he's probably in bed, like, but whatever, I'm going to go find him and go talk to him. So it was like an apartment complex, and I go through the little alleyway, and where do I find him? He's hanging on to dear life to the gate, right? So that leads to the main road. And for whatever reason, I just put it, like, I told him, like, hey, for whatever reason, God put it in my heart to come talk to you. You know, that's when I came to believe, right? Came to believe that there's a power greater than myself. I don't think I've been restored to sanity just yet, right? But I know that, like, there is a God, right? And there's a God working in my life. I know there's a God working in my life because 2 weeks out of treatment, I took the bus from, you know, Anaheim to Newport Beach and to hang out with a girl, you know, and I just got out of treatment, you know. So, I spend all day in the Newport area, and then I take the bus, right? I think it's the 46 bus up Harbor Boulevard. And I'm walking down Lincoln Boulevard. Maybe you know Anaheim or you don't, whatever. But as I'm walking down Lincoln, the Disneyland fireworks are going off. And it finally dawned on me, you know, I made it 8 hours in society without having to get drunk and loaded. That's Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I mean? Like, that's Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? That's God working in my life, you know? And just looking at it, like, I remember I shared about it in a meeting, like, damn, like, this thing's working, guys. And this, and I remember my buddies still make fun of me to this day, right? And I remember I said, like, I shared, and I'm like, those fireworks were for me, you know? You know, and truly they were for God, right? They were God's fireworks, you know, that this thing works. So, I don't know, like, alcohol, I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous and exactly what it's done for me, right? And what it can do for you, right? It's enabled me to get in contact with this power greater than myself. And the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous and the word God and the word higher power is that, like, you can come up with your own conception of a higher power. My God might not keep you sober, right? And that's the one thing that truly, like, was, like, attracting me to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you know, I progressed with the steps and did that fourth step and that fifth step. And I don't know, I shared with that man things that I was never going to share with anybody else. You know, that I was going to take to the grave with me. Obviously, we've all heard that before. Things that I didn't even write down, you know, and he didn't ask me, like, all right, what didn't you write down or whatever. I was already having that conviction as he was walking down out the sliding glass door from my sober living. Like, if I don't tell this man these things, I'm not going to stay sober. And I was like, hey, there's this one thing and this other thing. And he's like, all right, cool, man. I love you. You know, I love you. You know, and for a long time, I thought, like, man, if you knew these things about me, you wouldn't want to be around me. You know, if you knew the pile that I am, if you knew what goes on through my head, right, and how I try to manipulate everything around me. Thank you, Daniel, for blowing my ego up. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I didn't tell him to share that, like, that he came to blow me up or whatever. But that does wonders for me, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, everybody's gonna think about me when I go home tonight. Think about me in my suit, you know? Thank God for that 10 step, you know what I mean? You know, and the awareness to like, this is why I do what I do, right? I'm craving to either be dominant or dependent on other human beings, like, and I cannot place my dependence upon like above God, right? On people above God. And today, like, I got 10 minutes, so I don't know. There's instances in my life early on in sobriety when I continued to have that conviction of God. Right. I did the telemarketing job for a month, knocking door to door, trying to sell you paint and windows, and I sucked at it, you know. But I showed up every day, and I wasn't going to quit. And you know, on the day that I got fired, my aunt calls me like, "Hey, I cleaned the house of this guy who owns this like machine shop in Stanton, right around the corner from the Connect, where I crawled out of pretty much." And she's like, "Why don't you call this guy?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll call him." And I called him. He's like, "Hey, why don't you come down for an interview?" He's like, "You know what? I'm at this job. I'm not doing that well, but I want to see things through, right? I don't want to quit. I don't know where I came up with that idea, but I'm like, whatever. I'm going to see things through." And we get back to the office. I get on the bus. I'm heading back to my sober living. And my supervisor at the time, he calls me and he tells me, "Hey, Luis, come back. We need to talk," or whatever. "All right, I'm on the bus. I'll get off the bus and I'll come back." I was like, "Oh, you're on the bus, man? Don't worry about it. Just don't come back to work." You know what I mean? And I had full faith that God was going to work this out, you know? And I called that man up, Rick. I'm like, "Hey, man, I'll come in for that interview tomorrow." I show up for that interview right around the corner from where I crawled out of, right? There's like Rock Center Detox. There's a methadone clinic. There's a hood over there, whatever. And that's my dream come true, right? I'll live at the train tracks. You know, like, I got a job, you know what I mean? Like, it's finally worked out. But by this time, God has worked in my life, and I was safe and protected. So I show up for that interview, I pocket it. I get back to the sober living. He calls me like, "Hey, you know, you're going to start tomorrow." And I was like, "Cool." I get back to my sober living as I'm like taking out the stuff from my pocket. I take this like ballpoint G2 pen, right, with this like red tape around the shaft or whatever. And I'm like, "Oh, that's not my pen. You know, that's this guy's pen." And the next morning I wake up to get to the bus to make it to the shop. And as I'm walking to the bus, it just dawns on me, like, I don't have this guy's pen. I need to return it, you know? And that's like, that's not me, right? That's God telling me, like, "Hey, you got to do the right thing and return this man's pen." I know it's just like, it's just a pen, right? But I'm like caught in this fork in the road. I'm either going to be late for the bus, or I'm going to go back and return this man's pen. So I run back up there. I grab the pen and I get on the bus and I make it to his office. And this man, he had attained that company on like a prison furlough, right? And he was sober at the time and stuff, and he liked to help out other people, and so he wasn't nice about it when I walked in. He's like, "Hey, Luis, you took my fucking pen, man." You know, and I was like, "Boom, here you go," you know. And that's exactly how I carried myself for the next 5 years. They sponsored me to go to school, right, through like a state-funded like nationwide school or whatever. I got some certificates. I got some experience. All from just like, "Hey, I'm going to carry myself with some integrity," showing up every day. Then I move on to the next step today. I have a career out of that, and coming from like where I didn't have anything today. I work on like spaceship parts, you know, and it's pretty cool. It blows my mind, you know, and the most important things in my life today is the commitments that I have in H&I, right? Today, I'm the institution chair for the North Orange County H&I. I have three panels a month that I go to that are in Two and Theo Lacey. One is Modke, the last place that I was incarcerated in, right? And it's like the most beautiful thing is to sit there and share with these guys, like, hey, you know, I got to come in there business casual or whatever, and my hair fucking done or whatever, and I tell them, like, hey, man, this is the last place I was busted, right? K-14, cell 5, you know what I mean? And like, look at me like, what? And then I drop little hints of, like, Alcoholics Anonymous and what Alcoholics Anonymous has done in my life. And to gain their confidence, there's no other feeling in the world, right? To gain another man's confidence through the words like Alcoholics Anonymous has provided me. You know, and all I do is try to carry a message. You know, H&I has been like a big staple in my recovery today. Like when COVID happened, right? I didn't have anything left. Well, not anything left, but it's just like, okay, what am I going to do in programs, right? I refuse to do Zoom meetings. Sorry, Zoomers. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to do that. Like, I just refused, you know? And I was outwardly vocal about it, you know? And I told my sponsor, like, I'm not going to do these. I would go on Zoom meetings. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore, you know? And thank God that's when, like, I was introduced to Daniel, you know, and we did his steps over the phone. You know, the first time I met with him, we didn't practice social distancing, and we did his fist step, you know, at Huntington Beach Central Park, you know, and that's just a reminder that, like, all I need is this big book and a newcomer, right? That's all I need in God, you know, and I'm going to be all right. You know, today what my sobriety looks like is just a lot of that. You know, I'll share this one thing and I'll shut up. You know, it's beautiful, like, to see how Alcoholics Anonymous has worked in John's life. He was like up, I don't know, they were about to finalize their divorce. You know, we were living together at the time, and I saw, like, the journey, like, his wife, like, didn't want anything to do with him anymore. Like, the only thing he could do is, like, text her good morning, you know, and she like barely would, like, give him any, like, she didn't want anything to do with him, you know, and I saw what Alcoholics Anonymous had done for his life, and you know, like, they celebrated their anniversary, you know, like, they were on, like, the verge of finalizing the divorce, right? That's what happens around here in Alcoholics Anonymous. If there's anything that I shared, is that, like, somebody's probably getting good sleep at night. Somebody's prayers are probably being answered tonight because we're in here. You know, I don't know who that might be for you guys. I know for me, that's my mom, right? This little Mexican immigrant woman who cleans houses for a living, you know, like. And every time I, like, shit all over this woman's life. I don't know, to you guys in treatment, like, think about that, right? Whose heart is going to be broken if you go back out there and get loaded again? Like, not only, like, did my, like, drinking and drugging affect, like, me, it was a burden on other people, right? Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because, like, me and her, we spend every Sunday together, right? She gets good sleep. And she gets to worry about her problems, not my problems. That's the biggest gift Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. It's giving me back a relationship with my little sister. Every time I show up, she would leave to go to my aunt's, you know. Today, I know she has this boyfriend. She spends like 24 hours. that's her whole life. And it's cool, man. I can show up and he wants to get into the same field of work that I do, right? So I just tell them what I did, you know what I mean? it's just like things that I would never imagine, like, goes on in my life. You know, I've been afforded the ability, the gift to travel a couple places on my own. You know, I've been to Madrid, Barcelona, you know, Spain, Tahiti, all these places on my own, you know, and like, to go there alone and go wherever free man can go is the biggest gift I've ever gotten. You know, one thing I'll tell you guys, like, I showed up in Madrid one night, and it was like 3 a.m, and I wanted a cigarette. I do as the locals do. And I asked this guy, I'm like, hey, man, I think I already had cigarettes. I just need a lighter. I don't know, something. So one of those things. And I asked him, like, hey, he was all drunk and incoherent. And I asked him, like, hey, you got a cigarette or whatever? We get to talking, and he was telling about how he was living in his mom's couch, and he asked me if I wanted a drink, and I said no, and I'm sober. And he said, oh, what do you do to stay sober, man? Or like, I do like these, like, and like he just blurted out like Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, yeah, that's what I do. He's like, oh yeah, I've been to the rooms, you know, and that's when I put my AA cap on, you know what I mean? I was like, oh yeah. And you know, to be able to be in those, like, at those spots at the right time, that's like a that's the best, like, if there's any description of Alcoholics Anonymous of God, is like, that's what it is right there, right? Nothing in my life today happens by mistake. It's exact, my life is exactly the way it's supposed to be, right? And getting there to accepting that isn't always the easiest. You know, I've caused some harm around here in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's given me the tools to learn from them, grow, and make amends, you know, and continue to seek this higher power. There's amends that, you know, I reach out to people on a yearly basis, and they still don't want anything to do with me. But I know that, like, the California Victims Compensation Board is, like, all paid off, you know. So I'm just very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous and exactly what it's done for me, right? And what it's done for me is it showed me that it works through you guys. You know, it works through you guys. And thank you for that. That's all I got.